Three, two, one.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. My name is DJ Wooldridge, and with me, as always, is the amazing Roxy Stryer. Say hi to the kids at home, Roxy.
Is it helpful, DJ, when you say three, two, one, and then you're about to hit start, and then I just start counting down the same numbers you just counted down because I just want to be included?
Yeah, I don't blame you. It works out.
I don't know what that is. It's like the five-year-old in me. I hear three, two, one, and I was like, my turn. 3, 2, 1 also for me.
I want to count too, but
I also want to count down, DJ. Thank you.
Please. Well, next
I
time
I got the vowels from stupid.
Next time I will have you count down, and I think that'll solve all our problems.
Oh, I'm so excited about that.
So this is the show that we talk about movies, TV shows, comic books, and literally whatever the hell else we like to talk about. We want to answer your questions. And today we're talking about a host of things, but our main topic for today is New Mutants, because after many years in purgatory or limbo, let's say limbo, that's a part of the movie, it is finally, you know, came to a theater and is now streaming at home, and we finally had a chance to watch it. We're going to talk about that and the future of the X-Men movies, but a whole bunch of other things. And like every week, we like to start off our show with what we are into this week. And Roxy, you are into a couple things. What are you into this week?
I'm into so many things. Thank you for noticing, DJ. I'm like, miss, I'm into. If you like it so much, then why don't you marry it? I don't know what grade I'm in right now. One of the things that I'm into.
Not to give away where you're at, but it makes sense that you might be reliving some of your youth because you're on the road right now.
Right.
Yeah.
In the basement.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. It is actually kind of funny because I do feel like when I come home, I have childlike tendencies. You know, you can hear yourself getting a little whinier. Or like the other day, I was on a Zoom with some people from work, and my dad calls me. He's like, Rock? And I'm like, yeah, Dad. And he's like, do you want any grapes? And I'm like, I would love grapes. Thank you, Dad. Like, I'm 30 years old. Mm-hmm. what's happening? Like,
you're getting your grapes.
They're like, is your father bringing you grapes right now? I was like, yes, he is. Thank you so much for acknowledging my situation currently. But you know, I've been alone during this pandemic. So finally I get to be like a kid getting taken care of. But one of the things I've been doing, oh yeah, go ahead, DJ.
No, I always find when I go home, I've learned this about myself. When I go home, there's always a certain amount of stress because you're leaving your environment. You're re-entering an environment that you've left a long time, but there's a certain ease to it because you're not finally, for once, you're not responsible for anything. You just need to show up. Like, that's basically all you need to do. My mom and my sister came out to visit us a couple years back, and I was so stressed because I was now the host. I was like responsible for things. And I didn't realize it at the time.
Whoa. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know that I'd be able to handle it. I need somebody else getting me grapes. I cannot be getting grapes.
Yeah, you don't want to get them grapes. Then you got to go to the store and get the grapes. You're like, what if you get the wrong grapes? See, now it's a whole thing.
I know. So one of the things I have been doing, though, as I'm quarantined here with my sister, is that we love binging shows together.
Yes.
And when you pick the show that you're going to binge, because we're both going to be together for about 6 days, and we like sleep in the same bed and we watch TV for like 2 or 3 hours at night together.
Love it.
So it's a big deal when we get together what show we're going to start, because we're probably going to do some heavy damage. Mm-hmm. Like, we are going to really make our way through. So we kind of did, we read the room, we polled the crowd, we asked a bunch of people that we trusted about their TV recommendations. And one show kept popping up as an underrated comedy of the last decade. And that was a show called You're the Worst.
Yes.
Now, I'm a big FX fan in general. I think FX makes some great content. So anytime somebody recommends something to me on FX, I'm like, okay, I definitely at least will give this a shot. And now that Fox has been bought by Disney and FX is on Hulu, and it's really convenient to watch everything there, and very bingeable. And it goes with the Roku, you know, a lot of this played into the factor, but we were like, all right, let's just give it a shot. And this show is so cringeworthily good. It is awesome. I put out a tweet this past week saying that I think that my favorite genre in general is cringe. I love cringe television. Like, anything that you have to watch like this, and you're like, ooh, ah. And this show is so that. It's a really, really interesting take on relationships. and being a kind of person who like doesn't actually want to be in a committed relationship, but then somehow finds themselves in a committed relationship. And one of the four main characters is a war vet, but it's a comedy. And I think that they've handled that really interestingly as well.
Yeah.
And I just think they do a really phenomenal job with it. And also Aya Cash is the main woman in it. And I just loved her coming off of The Boys.
Yeah.
So I thought that, and you don't even, you barely even recognize her in this because it's such a different role.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise, surprise. She's actually not playing a Nazi in this, this show. So totally a different role. And yes, just good. It's really good. It's funny. It makes me like feel like I'm suffocating, which to me is a good thing when you're watching television. I'm super into it. DJ, have you ever seen this, heard of it, ever been recommended by a friend for this or not?
I've heard nothing but good things. I've actually had a few friends that have worked with Aya Cash and I've heard nothing but great things about her. And then people that have watched the show that have really loved it. I am kind of touch and go with the cringe stuff. It's so funny because I remember last week you were talking about Pen 15, which apparently was also a little bit cringy.
Yeah.
But you also made a big point. You're like, I want to just escape to the cringiest shows in the world.
Yes, that's all I want in life is to forget about my own stupid shit, which like there's a lot of shit. And then watch somebody else in pain. I'm like, ooh.
Perfect.
Yep.
Have you ever seen the show Rami on Hulu?
No, but people have definitely recommended me that. And Rami won. Rami Yusuf won the Emmy for that, didn't he?
I believe so. And that's one of the few shows I've watched. And you talk about cringing, that's especially in the second season. There were two scenes in the second season. One of them's in the finale that I literally had to stop. I had to stop the show and like walk away for a second because it was so uncomfortable. Maybe right up your alley.
I don't know, like it.
Yeah. Right up your alley. We actually had a question from Danny in the Discord. Why do you think You're the Worst missed out on mainstream? I'm assuming he's talking about that it is kind of like people kind of view it as an underrated classic.
Yeah, I will say I wouldn't recommend it to everyone. So I think that's one of the main reasons.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people would watch this and be like, they're both in the same way that It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Like you don't really like either of the main two characters. And of the main four, they're all very flawed.
Yeah.
They're kind of mean to each other. They do things that are like completely unforgivable, yet they end up being equally as shitty to each other. So then they end up forgiving each other on a lot of things. And it's not like it totally reinvents the wheel.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh my God, this is the first time I've ever seen anything like this. It doesn't have any A-list celebrities attached to it either. It's just a bunch of really good actors performing in a show about relationships and working in Los Angeles, and it's cringeworthy as fuck. So like, I think that it doesn't get looked at well because the things that matter to people are like grand spectacle. This doesn't have that.
Yeah.
It's just really well written, really interesting premises, like they or positions that they get themselves into. But it's not like one of those shows where I'm like, oh, you should watch this with your grandma, your mom. There's crazy dragons in it, and there's this and there's that. It's just kind of a small show. It's a small show, but I love things like that. So I think it gets overlooked because it's certainly not for everybody. And that means that it's not going to get the kind of recognition that something like a Modern Family would get because you can relate to at least one of the characters on Modern Family. You see yourself in a little bit at least one of them, or of course a Friends, or I'm just trying to think of the actually recent things that have done well in comedies like this. Schitt's Creek doing really well. Like you kind of can connect to them a little bit more, or you find like that's a completely different premise that they're in this new town and all this stuff. This is just a normal show, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I think like I'm a huge FX fan. FX has produced some of my all-time favorite shows, and it is interesting because like I think HBO has like carved out this niche of like prestige TV, like cream of the crop, like some of the biggest budgets and all that stuff. Well, FX has kind of developed this kind of like underground television, like incredibly well-crafted television that'll like go for your throat. It's like we might not have those HBO budgets, but we're not messing around. We'll do stuff that like pushes buttons and test things. And I'm similar to you that like, and I think we might have discussed this before, that like on one level, I know I've mentioned this before, I know intellectually that Disney gobbling up all of the properties is not great for our industry. on a convenience level for DJ, it is pretty nice to have all those FX shows on Hulu.
Totally. Like the fact that I just have to go to one place, I hit play, and then it will play for 5 hours if I don't touch the screen. I'm like, you've got me.
Yeah.
I'm in.
You win.
This is the way it goes. Yeah. And I don't have to remember where I am because I'm logging my Hulu. So when I go back to LA, it's going to be at the same spot. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just those little things that make, they make a difference when you just don't even want to think about it. So yeah. And I can't emphasize enough how much I think that FX does a great job, because you said they don't have the same budget. They just pick the best writers, the yeah. best actors. They don't pick the biggest names. They pick the right people for the jobs. So they really take the craft and the art so seriously that I haven't watched an FX show in I don't even remember the last time that I was like, that wasn't good.
Yeah.
They really care. And as a writer, I know you are too, DJ. I've always said, like, it would be such an honor and dream to have my show on FX, because that's exactly where I would want to be as a creator.
Yeah.
Because of the attention to detail that they put in and the types of stories that they decide to tell. It's just so good. It's yeah. so good.
100%. Like, I would, you know, we'd all love that HBO money. Let's not kid ourselves. Yeah. That yeah, said, yeah. it's like to be in the same, on the same network that had The Shield, that had Justified, that had The Americans, that had yeah. Terriers, that had yeah. like all the, like, American Horror Story, fucking Feud, all the Ryan Murphy yeah. shows. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I know. They do a phenomenal job. And in general, FX doesn't get enough credit. I don't no. think people look at it as the player that it is. But anybody, if you ever hear people talk about FX, you know that, like, anybody who watches FX is like, FX is the greatest. Like, we ride for it so hard because it's underrated, for sure. For no. sure. Because it's not a Showtime. It's not an HBO now. It's not a Apple TV or whatever has all this money. Yeah. But it's still good. And this show is truly, truly phenomenal. What about you, DJ? What's going on with the DJ?
So,
DJ, so cool.
So for me, the exciting thing, I got an email yesterday. I got a screener for Disney and Pixar's Soul. So I was very excited to check this out. This was Pixar's latest movie that was supposed to be coming in the theaters, I believe, in June. And like everything else, that didn't happen. It's supposed to release on Disney Plus on Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. The last screener I got for a theatrical release that was moving to Disney Plus was Mulan. And I'm happy to report that Soul is... I enjoyed Soul more than I enjoyed watching Mulan. I'm a big fan
Whoa.
Of... Shocker! I'm a very... Like most people, I'm a very big fan of Pixar. I think they have significantly more hits than they have misses. Some of my favorite movies of all time, like WALL-E, Inside Out, The Incredibles. Like, there's so many movies that really mean a lot to me. What? Up is another. Well, speaking of Up, Pete Docter is the person that directed Soul. It was directed by Pete Docter with Kent Powers as a co-director. It was written by Pete Docter and Mike Jones and Kent Powers. And for those that don't know about Soul, it is a little hard to describe, so I'm going to go with the synopsis. A musician who has lost his passion for music. Huh? That's not... Anyway, a musician who has lost his passion for music.
You don't feel like that's what it is?
Oh, that's not it at all. That's 100% wrong, actually. So we're going into the synopsis already on a bad foot. The musician who's lost his passion for music is transported out of his body and must find his way back with the help of an infant soul learning about herself. Critics' consensus on Rotten Tomatoes, a film as beautiful to contemplate as it is to behold, Soul proves Pixar's power to deliver outstanding all-ages entertainment. Remains undimmed. So the lead guy, Joe, played by Jamie Foxx, in no way has lost his passion for music. He is being pressured by his mom in particular to take a stable teaching job and let go of his dream of being like a performing musician. And he gets a moment of his big break. And as we've seen in the trailers, he dies. His soul goes into the great beyond. And through certain machinations, he runs into this young soul, 22, played by Tina Fey, which is a really good bit about, I guess there's a mentorship program in the afterlife. And so the person that's giving out these souls is like, well, this soul is 1 billion, da-da-da-da-da-da, like a massive number. And then it's like, and this soul is 22. And Tina Fey's 22 is such a low number because she successfully avoided going to Earth since essentially the dawn of time. She does not want to go to Earth. She doesn't want anything to do about it. While Joe, because he's around ready to get his big break, wants to go back. And so they have to team up to figure out a way to get him back so he can have his big break. And of course, it's Pixar. So it goes, not only is it lovely, but like In-N-Out, they challenge animation conventions because it's dealing with more abstract concepts. So there's these group of entities known as Jerrys that are like line art, and the way they maneuver throughout the afterlife is unique for those watching. I just put up an asset of the Jerrys.
Ooh.
So, patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Anyway, and so like I will say, if you compare it to something like In-N-Out is a great burger. Inside
you keep
Out.
Calling it In-N-Out, and every time I smile.
Damn
every
it! I've been messing up this whole time. If you compare it to,
I wasn't even going to correct you. I was like, "Where them fries at? Where they at?"
If you go to compare it to Inside Out, excuse me, or an Up, it doesn't necessarily. It's not necessarily as good as those movies. I think particularly in Inside Out, because at least Inside Out has the framework of the way that the mind works. Whereas when you're talking about the afterlife, at that point, you're in complete abstraction. Like, we don't really have, people have ideas of that since the dawn of time, but we don't have the same gauge for it as the way we do the way the mind works.
Coco talks a little bit about the afterlife.
That's a good point. It's a very different afterlife. It's a very different afterlife. Weirdly, a little less scary, because Coco's like, when they forget about you, you're gone. It's like, oh, cool. A little less threatening in that sense. But there is a lot of dealing with Joe's feelings about what it means to be successful, what it means to pursue your dream, the idea of a purpose in life, the idea of pursuing your dream when other people don't necessarily think you're gonna make it, the feeling that if you don't make it, your life had no meaning. So for me, it really got right into the feels, and in particular, a lot of insecurities I have right now, because I think like a lot of us, you know, I had a lot of goals going into the year that literally could not pan out because of the pandemic. So there is a...
Damn you, Courtney COVID.
Yes, Courtney COVID strikes again. And so... Even if it wasn't like as narratively strong as something like Inside Out, it really did connect with me on a very personal level. And so I was very thankful to have been able to watch it right now. It is lovely. Of course it is well acted. Of course it is gorgeous. The animation in it is stunning. It even has a director of photography listed in the credits. I don't know what that means for an animated movie, but you can tell yeah. the work that went into it. Just to shout out some of the names, of course, I said Jamie Foxx, Tina Fey voices 22, Graham Norton's in there, Rachel House voices a character named Terry. If you're not familiar who Rachel House is, she was the character Topaz in Thor Ragnarok, which was the Grandmaster's, one of his main lackeys. She's very funny in the movie. Just so many.
I'm seeing a lot of names on here, DJ, like Felicia Rashad,
yep.
Angela Bassett, yep. Questlove, David Diggs. Yep. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's
was there a standout voice for you?
It is interesting because David Diggs has a significantly smaller role. It's essentially a cameo, but his voice is so distinct. Like the second he shows up, you're like, oh, it's cool. I actually thought Questlove acquitted himself very well, because obviously I perceive him more as a musician than an actor. Yeah. But I didn't even realize, like, for example, I don't know about you, Roxy. I checked out Good Lord Bird on Showtime, and there's a very brief Killer Mike cameo. And as cool, as much as I love Killer Mike, he is not an actor. So it was cool that you know, Questlove, like, I didn't even realize it was him until I looked it up. But if you, on Christmas Day, I know we actually have a new story about other, coming down the pipe about other Christmas Day releases that are coming to streaming platforms. Watch Soul. It's beautiful. It's lovely. Like a lot of Pixar movies, it's very life-affirming, but also willing to be challenging and honest about the fact that not everybody achieve fame or stardom or any of that stuff, but that is also not a good way to gauge a success in life. Which I always do. I do get a little bit cynical about when it's coming from something like Pixar, like none of you know about what it's like to be not successful. You're directing a Pixar movie. Don't give me that shit. You're making Pixar movies. But I think for anybody that might have some of those same struggles or insecurities or anybody that has goals in life, I think you'll find something really lovely in this movie. And also, it's pretty to look at. Even if you don't care about any of that, it's pretty to look at.
Honestly, I was sold, pun intended, Ba-da-bum. Before, but now I'm really sold. Just give it to me.
You got it. You got it. And you're also like, but if there's not any in and out in that movie, I'm going to
be. Yeah, but where is the in and out?
Where is the in and out?
Animal style. Am I right, people?
Now, let's talk about New Mutants. Roxy, you are very excited to talk about this. Let's give your spoiler-free thoughts on New Mutants.
Well, I owe Only Stupid Answers a lot of things, and I have to say thank you, because without OSA, I guarantee you that I was not going to watch the movie.
Really?
I was really just not going to watch it. And then talked to DJ last week, and we talked about the Mandalorian reviews and whatnot, and we were like, okay, maybe New Mutants came out. It's pretty, they're doing it rental. You don't even have to buy it, which is very rare for these types of movies. Usually they come out, you got to spend that $20. It's $4.
Yeah.
Why don't we just watch it? I have a flight. What am I doing on the flight? I'll just watch it on the flight. And we'll talk about it on the show and we'll rag on it all we want. We'll just talk about how much this movie was whack and never should have happened. And they should have just kept it in the vault somewhere. And then I saw it. And I couldn't, the entire time, all I kept thinking was, I like this movie. Wait, I'm really enjoying myself. Wow, I like these characters. Huh, most of these actors are pretty good. I'm interested in what happens here. Will I say that this is the best movie of all time? Absolutely not. Will I say that this movie was vastly underrated and people were crazy calling this the worst movie, the worst comic book movie, the worst movie of this year, all those things that people labeled this? I mean, it's ridiculous, DJ. This movie is totally good. It is a good, solid, it gets me from point A to point B to point C, and it does it with flair. It does a couple things that I haven't seen before or haven't really been focused on in the comic book, like teenage movie like this. I'm a lover of love, a shipper of ships. So there's a lot of romance elements.
A lot of that in there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Obviously, you know I'm into, because I'm a hopeless romantic. I was shocked with how much I liked this movie. I felt bad, even though I watched this movie through a face shield and two masks. I felt bad with how loud I kept saying, it's pretty good. Pretty good. Pretty
I like good. You like getting up and like tapping someone on the shoulder like, this is actually pretty good.
Like, did anyone else see this? Because based on your guys' reviews, I thought this was going to be hot garbage. But this movie's actually pretty freaking good. Will I say that there were a couple of the actors that were not acting as much as I would hope? I mean, or maybe acting too much. Mm-hmm. They're either not acting enough or they're acting too much. Yes, I will say that I thought that some of the accents in this movie were shoddy at best.
Yes, they could have dialed back some of the accents.
Some of the accents were woof. But in general, yeah, I'm here for Maisie Williams. I think
she was really good in the movie.
She was really excellent. I like some of Anya Taylor-Joy's choices. I love her as an actress in general, speaking of Queen's Gambit. Yeah. But speaking of the accent, touch and go on that one. This was not Charlie Heaton's best work.
Yeah, agree with that. Yes,
it was not his best. But in general, I got what we were going for, and I think that they, after all things are said and done, I think they executed a totally solid movie.
Yeah, I think it's totally. It's definitely not the worst X-Men movie. I can promise you that. It is, for me, it was perfectly fine. There were things that I liked that I'll get more into when I get in the spoilers, because I think they're a little bit specific. But I even though we just talked about like Charlie Heaton's not necessarily his best work. For me, the accent in particular was his accent, his backstory. It's like, oh, you're going for a very specific thing that I don't think is as common as you think it is. But let's go on.
I don't know that that was his fault, though. I agree with that.
So just to give you all a little bit of info, the synopsis for New Mutants is five young mutants just discovering their abilities while held in a secret facility against their will fight to escape their past sins and save themselves. That is a better synopsis than Souls was, as far as accuracy. It was directed by Josh Boone and written by Josh Boone and Nate Lee. And on Rotten Tomatoes, the critics' consensus is rendering a list of potentially explosive ingredients mostly inert. The New Mutants is a franchise spinoff that lets that's less than the sum of the superpower parts. It has a 33% on the tomato meter and a 56% audience score. I think the audience score I agree with more than the tomato meter. The tomato meter seems a touch harsh on this one, like you were talking about.
I mean, ridiculously harsh. Like, I feel like people reviewed this movie before they even saw it. We all heard that this was going to be a train wreck. And so people were like, I'm just going to write this off as the train wreck it is. And I feel like they, and I know this isn't true. I'm sure the critics actually did watch it, but I feel like they didn't even give it a fair shake. Like,
well, I think you and I are in a similar position here. Like, before I started doing what we do and then going to screenings and stuff like that, there's this sense of like the critic, the reviewer is in this kind of like rarefied air and they're able to take their own opinions out of it. And that is not fucking true. Like when you go to these screenings, these are just dudes and dudettes. People. Yeah, these are just people, and they will 100% go in with preconceived notions that will 100% influence their reviews. Like, there have been a few, I remember very specifically, Sam and I were walking out of Glass, and we were all like, we didn't love the movie. We were like, that was pretty good. I enjoyed myself. And you could hear the people around, you could hear the consensus around us, and we were the minority. Like, people were not having it. And I've been in rooms like, I was going to a screening, it was some A24 screening, and two other critics were sitting there and they were talking about their opinions on Joker. And it was very clear that they had preconceived, whatever your feelings on that movie, they very much had preconceived notions going into what it was. So I think you are probably right with that. And it is tough in their defense with the sordid history of this movie and where it falls within the franchise and how long it's just been kicked around.
Yes. Here are a couple of reviews that I agree with. Tim Roby from the Daily Telegraph says, you know what? It's nowhere near the disaster you'd probably imagine. I wholeheartedly agree. Absolutely. Brett White from Decider said, it's far from the best X-Men film, but it's also far, far from the worst. That is so true. But then there's these reviews on here that are like, crapping on this movie like it is the worst movie that you've ever seen. Everybody, as you said, it has a 33%. So yeah. As the top critics all ripping this to shreds, giving it a 2 out of 5. A 2 out of 5. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Like, this movie was, I'm not saying it's great. It is good. I really enjoyed it. It was good. It was good. And maybe I only feel it was good because of how bad everybody else said it was. But like, it's fair that the audience is at 56%. I would probably put that closer to in the mid 60s, maybe even at a 70. Kind of reminded me of how I felt about Venom, where I was like, I like this movie.
Yeah, Venom. I'm with you. I had to be fair. I'm a big Venom fan. I was a kid in the '90s, so Venom is my jam, and I like Tom Hardy a lot. And the fact that he was having fun meant I was having fun. So maybe I'm not judging that movie fairly. But with this movie, let's go into spoilers because there's some specific spoiler things I want to talk about, and I'm gonna jump on first with the Charlie Heat thing. Like when they start going to like, I worked in a mine, and they like got the pickaxes and stuff. I'm like, wait, what century is this? What's happening? I don't know the answer to that. And that accent is thick, and as a fan of Justified that also takes place in Kentucky mining country, accents were a lot more subtle on that show. I'm with you though. I thought Maisie Williams powers were the dumbest, if I'm being honest. Her performance though, I thought was just what this movie needed to really ground it. And I also really liked the romance between her and Danny, because I think through all the superhero movies I've seen, I don't think a superhero movie's done a lesbian romance, and it was very sweet and tender.
Just that alone for me was like, okay, I like this film. because they had legitimate chemistry.
Yeah.
I loved watching them. I love Danny not trusting Rain at first because she doesn't necessarily trust anybody, because we've seen Anya Taylor-Joy's character be like a total mess of a person. Mm-hmm. And then I like Danny and Rain having the soft spot for each other. And Maisie Williams is actually just a fantastic actress.
Yes.
She's been doing this for a minute, so it's good that she... But I think she's actually one of the more underrated actresses to come from Game of Thrones. I know that Emilia Clarke gets all this praise, but for me, what Maisie Williams was able to do on that show as a child and then growing up, she's just got it. She's got chops. And you just believe that these two young women, despite everything going on around them and all of the horrible things that they had dealt with, just like found each other. And that moves me. I love when people find love in a hopeless place, not to quote Rihanna on this one, but like,
but why not?
I just thought that was beautiful. I thought that was great. I liked seeing them grow and develop. It wasn't like, oh, we saw each other. It just seemed like a realistic romance, and it happened to be between two women, and it wasn't forced, and it wasn't weird, and it wasn't, they didn't just like have to explain like, I'm a lesbian. Are you a lesbian too? Mm-hmm. It was like, I've never done this before with a woman, with anybody, just like teenage shit, which was really, really cool to watch. And imagine coming up as like a young queer woman, man, whatever, and having this be one of the first times you've ever seen in a major tentpole movie that like, that's chill.
Mm-hmm.
It's just crazy. We're in fucking, it's 2020. Like, why can't you and I, who are big nerds, think of any other examples of this? That's so stupid.
And it's a bummer that the movie that's in, it was one that was like shunted around and finally just kind of dropped in the middle of a pandemic.
Yes, like it's not even being talked about that this happened.
I will say is the accents in general, I think, were kind of spotty. I like Anya Taylor-Joy as an actress, and Magic is a character that I know is popular in the comics, but has never really done anything for me. But seeing her, there was clearly a lot of love for that character in this movie. And so seeing her take on the demon bear at the end, seeing her ability, seeing the sword, growing up as a kid, Lockheed was a favorite of mine. And so when she pulls out that puppet, I'm like, bullshit. If we don't actually see fucking Lockheed, I'm going to call bullshit on this shit. And so when it showed up at the end, I was like, fuck yeah, you got the little purple dragon. I'm kind of already on board now. Like, it kind of doesn't matter what you do for the rest of the movie. I'm kind of good with you now.
Yeah, that was such a cool, why not?
Yeah.
Why not add that in there? So I agree. And I think that Anya Taylor-Joy, it's hard for me to say she did a fantastic job in this movie because that accent work was not great. It didn't seem even fully necessary, and it does feel, I don't know, Josh Boone's work that well.
Yeah.
I do like Fault in Our Stars. Yeah. So, you know, I think that I don't know what else that he's done, but I do feel like when you have a shoddy accent, but you have an excellent actor, a director needs to step in and say like, we either need to tone this back, tone it up, like dial it in, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It is partially on the director to like be honest with the actors and say what's working, because we didn't need to hear what she was bringing to the table with that. But her movements are so spot on, and her dedication and her stare and her focus. She really gives herself to characters. And I think it's really cool to watch. I think it's cool to see this young upcoming actress who's got really unique features. She's obviously striking, but she's different. And I think that she has a long career ahead of her. And I think that this was a role that she did a pretty good job in, convincing me that she's a fucking magical badass who's scared as shit and also bitch. Yeah. Like all of those things at once. Yeah. She was multi-layered, which we don't see all the time, especially from our young female characters. They're kind of just one thing. She was many things. And so despite the not so great accent, I was really happy with this character.
Yeah, it's one of those, as somebody that you know, has directed a few shorts and stuff like that, wants to be a director, those expressive eyes. It's like you could do so much with just her eyes in a shot and a scene, and just the way she's able to express it. Especially, it makes sense that she kind of came up through horror stuff, because it's like, that's horror gold. I will say with that character, something that did throw me out of the movie is obviously a big plot point is, actually, honestly, I know Dr. Reyes gets a whole thing describing her power, Danny's powers, but it doesn't make any fucking sense if you think about it. Anyway, her powers are bringing people's fears to life. And Ileana's and Anya Taylor-Joy's fears are these guys that basically, they all but state that they were molesting her, and they become kind of these monsters that are like chasing them. It's like, that's not fun. These guys, I feel weird that these are kind of like our henchmen monsters that are basically pedophiles. This is weird.
Yeah, and looked like the fucking creepy Buffy characters too. It was weird. And then like there's that one scene where we're like, they can't hurt you, they can't hurt you. And it's like, yes, they can. Fucking run. Mm-hmm. And so many times in this movie, I will say that they like stop for breath and like the monsters are right behind them. And it's like, there's no way you're stopping because we need to catch up with the camera. Mm-hmm. There's no other reason you're stopping right now. Like with those monsters, there were a lot of strange interactions and they're coming from all angles. And like, sometimes you can kill them really easily by like doing your explosion-y powers. And sometimes you can't kill them at all. And you're super duper afraid. They weren't my favorite part of the movie either.
Yeah. Danny M in the chat says, he also really loves the characters. He really felt very close to the comics. I am a particular fan of Sunspot and Cannonball. Mm-hmm. So Sam and I forget his civilian name. Charlie Eaton's character and the character played by Henry Zaga, Roberto da Costa. And I liked the easy, just them hanging out. It was nice. It felt like a nice little nod to the fan. It's like, yeah, these in the comic, these guys are like best friends. Like, and so it felt like the seeds being planted of like, yeah, this is going to keep growing. And you can see where they wanted stuff to go. There's we've got a question for it in the Discord that we'll get into a second. They seed Essex Corp, which from the comics that was also seeded in Boiler Huff. Both Apocalypse and Mutants had Easter eggs pointing to Mr. Sinner. That's that Essex Corp. And the rumor has it the Gambit movie would have involved Sinister as well.
DJ, go ahead.
No, this is what we're going to ask.
It just felt to me also, though, like, I know this movie was not shot during the time of quarantine. Yeah. I know, in fact, this movie was shot years ago and was supposed to be released 5,000 times before quarantine, but it felt like a movie that was shot during quarantine because there's, like, four people in it the whole time.
Yeah.
And we're in one location for 95% of the movie. And that was kind of refreshing to me for a comic book movie, actually. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I was going to love that, but, like, us spending so much time in this lockdown made me feel claustrophobic. It made me feel stuck. It made me feel like the kids. And it wasn't about like going to the Earth 45, like, and we got to get back. And the timeline might change. And it just was kind of cool to stay put.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. What I was going to say is you can see where they were setting stuff up to go.
Yeah.
And future installments, which unfortunately we won't get, but to your point, Danny in the Discord chat says, this was such a small-scale movie. Do you see Marvel or DC doing more niche genre small-scale movies? If so, what characters would you like to see? If not, why not? Do you think, because I think that was kind of the big success of the Deadpool, the reason it's one of the best earning X-Men movies is because it was one of the cheaper X-Men movies. Do you think studios will like, I think they were trying to do a similar thing with Birds of Prey. Like it's kind of a comparatively smaller-scale movie.
DJ, if Birds of Prey and New Mutants were our tests, then I don't think that they made studios feel very confident.
That's not their fault.
It's definitely not, but not big earners.
Yeah.
I do think that when you're talking about more niche comic book movies, absolutely. That's why we got something like Joker, which instead of being a $250 million budget is a $70 million budget and is focused on one character. Obviously, it's not a small character, but just one character and is like kind of a horror-y, thriller-y type film.
Yeah.
So I do think we're going to get more of those. But no, this was almost like a bottle movie. It's like a bottle episode of a show, but as a movie. I mean, we really like were in this one house, and I thought that was extremely effective. So I would like to see studios think outside of the box and not have to go big or go home on every single thing.
Yeah.
But I kind of think after quarantine, everybody's going to want like the biggest space, escapism things possible. So I don't know. Genre, yes, but exactly like this, probably not.
Yeah. Which I do think is kind of a bummer. It's kind of frustrating to see studios get into this bigger is better model where they spend so much money that then they have to make back double that. Insane amount to be
successful at all.
Yeah. And so I'd like to see us make more just movies, just normal movies again, and not have them get shunted to Netflix all the time. Not that I have any problem with Netflix. It's just that, you know, like we discussed, once we're able to go see movies in theaters again, we like doing that. And so I would like to see more movies like Deadpool or Joker that spend less money and have a better opportunity to make more, in hopes that, like, I wish studios would look at Joker and be like, oh, maybe we can make crime movies again. You remember those? Like, we could just make crime movies again. They don't necessarily have to have a super character attached, but I do think it's depends on the character. Like, Spider-Man movies are always going to be big budget affairs, but there's characters like The Question. I mean, there's a reason, yeah. Moon Knight's going to Disney Plus and is not a big thing. Daredevil is another good example of a character that I think you could do. Like I think my dream would be to see them get more experimental. Like, how crazy would it be if Marvel went to somebody like the Safdie brothers, who did Uncut Gems and Good Time, yeah. and said, hey, you want to do Daredevil? Go to town.
Yeah.
I mean, with the budget of Uncut Gems, but go to town.
Yeah. It feels like that's not going to happen, but I'm super into that as well. That sounds fucking really fun to me.
Another question from the Discord, Christoph628, of the kids that made it out, which I think was most of our main kids, made it out, who would you guys be happy to see again? Who would you want to see maybe show up again from this movie?
In what?
I mean, yeah, it really is a hypothetical.
Yeah. Because, like, it kind of depends, like, in what, like, as a TV show, as a movie, as a one-off, like, in somebody else's film coming over to the MCU, like, in what would we see them? Because I think it makes a huge difference. I can tell you something. It's definitely not Charlie Heaton's character for any of those. Mm-hmm. And I actually do like him, but this just was not, it didn't land. Yeah. What he thought was working did not work. And yeah. Nobody let him know, but everybody knew it was not working.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe Rain. Because I think that hers was the most well-rounded. Yeah, but you're kind of right. She wasn't the most well-rounded with the powers. Yeah. She was just the best performed.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like you think like, oh, werewolf, that should be, we've done that in movies for years. And it's like, oh, this is silly. But she's so good that it doesn't matter really.
Yeah, so maybe like Rain Danny spinoff. I don't know. If your power is that you make people's fears come to life, I think there's a lot of things you can do with that in yeah. other formats. So I could see more about that. I also liked Henry Zaga in this. Mm-hmm. I thought that he did a good job. So who I also don't want to see anything more about is Dr. Reyes.
I don't think you have to worry about that.
Very good point. Yeah. But also, like, watching her come out with like those scratches all over, I was just like, ugh. I mean, imagine getting that hurt.
And it's weird too, because I think in the comics she's a heroic character. I think she's one of the X-Men, so it was weird to have her be in this role. Speaking of the dubious nature of ever seeing these characters again, Jake Hefner, are there any aspects of the Fox X-Men universe you'd like to see the MCU incorporate into their take on it, or should they just start with a clean slate? Because I know there's rumors with, you know, Scarlet Witch, maybe they could like do some universe stuff. Do you want to see some of these characters blend over, or should Marvel just start from scratch?
I think that it's going to be much more beneficial for them to start from scratch.
Agreed.
Because it's going to be really hard to pick and choose. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, but let's justify every time we recast versus every time we have somebody. Like, although they are, did you see all that Quicksilver news?
Recent stuff. I haven't seen recent stuff, but I know that if I remember correctly, the actor who played Quicksilver in the X-Men movies is supposed to. They haven't confirmed that he's Quicksilver, but he's supposed to be in WandaVision, right?
Because that I think it was one of those things. It wasn't Lego, but you know when they do the like you find something out because of the dolls and the Legos and the whatever it was. There was a Quicksilver that looks like Evan Peters, doesn't look like whatever the other dude's name was.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas. No, that's not what it is. Yeah. I can't remember.
Aaron Taylor
Johnson. Bingo. We got there.
Fine. I interviewed him for Collider Live. Remember his name very well. Good rocks. But so I don't know how they're going to do that. I don't know what they're going to do with Evan Peters coming through, or how they're going to I don't know. What do you think, DJ?
I think trying to incorporate any, I do support Evan Peters' Quicksilver showing up in WandaVision, because that's a very, one, his take on Quicksilver. Quicksilver is a character I do not give a shit about in the comics. His Quicksilver was great. Yeah. And so the considering Wanda's relationship to that, her abilities, if that's the one dude that, even if he doesn't like come over, we just see there's an interaction there, on board with that. Otherwise, the idea of trying to incorporate anything from those movies, I think, is a fucking mistake. I think it's too complicated. People, I know
it is so complicated.
It'd be so complicated. And if there's a lot of people that are like, well, they have to do some sort of epic retcon to include mutants. Bullshit. Fucking Captain Marvel was supposedly around before Avengers, and she just was around. Wakanda, Black Panther, has supposed to been around since the dawn of time. And they, you know, you could, I think there's easy ways that you can say mutants were around. We didn't know. And now we do. And that's, and we just move forward with that.
I mean, it happened in DC too, with Wonder Woman, who was like, yeah, no, I decided to like work in a museum for a little bit, but like, I'm back now.
Yeah. I think you say that characters like Professor X, maybe Magneto, some of those characters have been around for whatever reason, did not feel emboldened to come out. Post Thanos, it maybe more mutants are showing up, and it becomes a thing. Like, maybe Professor X is big on, we got to keep it a secret, so everybody at the school is keeping it secret, and then now the secret is out and we just move on, and now mutants are a part of our world.
Think any of them got snapped away?
I think any other explanation for why mutants showing up, I think you're making that's the beauty. The reason Stan Lee made mutants is because he was tired of coming up with a reason people had powers. So he just was like, they're born with it. And he moved on. Yeah. I think anything, you're doing yourself a disservice by trying to make it any more complicated than that. And I think Marvel at this point has the cachet that they don't need to.
I agree. And just in general, I don't know that I've phrased this, but like, I love that about mutants.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that it's like, and here you go. I mean, I think that sometimes it's just like, we spend so much time on backstories that we forget that like, we actually just have to move forward. And mm-hmm. I'm okay with kind of whatever explanation you give me, just hit me with it and move on.
Yeah, I think that's one of the issues we've had with our current superhero boom, is I think people, filmmakers, forget that a lot of times origins are perfunctory. Like, they're just an excuse to get to the cool stuff, which is the powers and all that. Like, they're not like Spider-Man is unique in that he has an origin story. Like, when it comes to characters like Batman, oh, his parents are died and now he's a bat. Like, literally, that's.
But what about the pearls, DJ? How did they fall to the ground? We must see.
Every time, even Joker, that's not a Batman movie, we need to see the Waynes die.
To see the pearls.
So I kind of hope that it's that maybe we find out retroactively that yes, Wanda and Pietro were mutants, and it just the Hydra experiments activated it.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like our gateway into that, but then we just kind of move forward. It's like, mutants are a thing now. We're moving forward. And I think, like you said, like the idea of, I think it's the same issue with the Defenders. If you bring back any of the, if you try to decide to bring back Charlie Cox as Daredevil, then you're kind of forced into a position where you're like, well, why not Finn Jones as Iron Fist? Like, you know.
You know why.
You know why. We don't need to explain this. You know why.
Yeah.
We got another, I think this will be our last question for the episode. We got a question from Brenda. What characters that we haven't seen or haven't had as much screen time would you like to see in future films or shows? So in this hypothetical future, X-Men are coming to the MCU. Are there characters you'd like to see more of, or maybe characters that we haven't seen yet that you'd like to see?
Well, the question was types of characters, right?
What characters? Yeah, what characters that we haven't seen or haven't had as much screen time would you like to see in future films or shows?
Do you have immediate answers to which specific characters you want to see
that
we haven't seen?
For me, I'm a major character fan of the character Phantom X. I've talked about this a lot. He's created by Grant Morrison. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like if Grant Morrison created Deadpool. So less jokes. More just general weirdness, but he's like a master thief. He looks cool. His abilities are interesting. I think there'd be an easy way to like integrate him into, because he's, you know, if Wolverine is Weapon X, which is 10, he's Weapon 13. Like, he's part of that whole thing. I think it'd be
That's cool.
I think it'd be easy to make him like a Wolverine supporting character or whatever.
You have dream casting?
No, I think that's a tough one. Honestly, I think my whole thing with X-Men, again, I think X-Men has always been a franchise that has dealt with minorities and characters like that. So I think even though a large chunk of X-Men are white men, I think you shake that up. So I actually think Phantom X in particular would be an easy way to change a character to make them non-binary. Because there was an arc where Phantom X got split up into three personalities, and one of them was a woman. His nervous system is actually outside of his body as like a spaceship. So pronouns like they make a lot of sense for this character. So I think I would make the character non-binary. I would look at non-binary actors to portray that character. He's also weird because he's British, but he pretends that he's French. So there's things you'd have to work out with that. But I think other characters that I'd like to see more of, I don't think the X-Men movies ever did a good job with Cyclops or Storm. And I'd like to see, I personally would say, listen, we know Wolverine is going to get his own standalone movie. That's going to happen. He's one of the most popular comic characters in the history of the world. And you're probably going to cast a white straight cis dude to play him, and that makes sense, and we should move forward with that. But in X-Men movies, less is more. Have him have one amazing action scene where he kicks all of the ass, but otherwise he's a supporting character to characters like Storm and Cyclops. And I would change Cyclops. If I were to cast Cyclops, if they called me up and like, who's with Cyclops, I'd cast John Boyega. I think he would really, especially with the role he's played in the current, you know, Black Lives Matter protests. I think he's there. I think
it would definitely mean like Disney. It would be Disney making a statement.
Yeah, I think he would elevate a character that, like, if I'm being honest, Cyclops is not one of my go-tos. But I know there's a lot of value in the character, and I think if you cast somebody like John Boyega, like you're elevating that character, and you make the movie about him. And Storm, I know Wolverine's way more popular, but Storm is one of the greatest X-Men of all time. And so, like, spending more time with her, I think would just be really great. And she's so iconic. Like, mutual friend Jayla Rocks, when she was on the show, she talked about how much Storm meant to her. And so it's like, I know Storm means a lot to a lot of people. So I think spending more time with that character and really nothing against Halle Berry. I think Halle Berry is a great actress, but she wasn't given anything to do with that role.
Do you have any dream Storm casting?
I do. I don't know why I'm blanking on the name right at this moment. Oh, Cynthia Erivo. Who's been?
Oh my God, just like so fucking good.
Yeah, she was in The Outsider. She played Harriet Tubman and Harriet. I'm also a big fan.
What was that movie? Fast Times at the El Royale.
Yeah. Bad Times at the El Royale.
I merged Fast Times at Ridgemont High and Bad Times.
She was the best part of that movie, Cynthia, like, and she was in Widows, and she was amazing in that. I think her star is just going up, and I think if that pairing, you'd have like it'd be like a supernova. It'd be great. I'm also a big fan. If you wanted somebody like less well known, Yvonne Orji from Insecure. I think she plays Molly in Insecure. She has. I want to say
it's, I love her,
an so African much. Background. I'm hoping I'm not misremembering. So it would mesh well with Storm, and also she's got great comic timing. Like, she could do all of the things. Like, whatever you'd want Storm to do, I think she could do a good job. I feel like I've been talking a bunch. Do you have?
No, totally. I was talking actually with Winston today about why he doesn't want Emily Blunt to be Sue Storm, and it's because he wants her to be Emma Frost, which I thought was interesting casting as well. But yeah, I'm kind of for me, we've seen a lot of the X-Men characters. We've seen a lot of them done well. We've seen a lot of them done poorly. I agree with almost everything that you've said so far, DJ, if not everything. But I do think that this is just a massive opportunity. And I hate to sound like this person who's just like pushing an agenda, but a lot of people learn about representation and different types of people from these movies. Like, it's their first. And the fact that we were just talking about in New Mutants, this like beautiful lesbian love story of these teens coming up. It's, and also I was going to put this on my list of things to talk about this week. I'm sure you saw about the non-binary Kid Quick becoming the Flash, which is really freaking cool as well. I just think that this is a chance to show people something a little different that they might not be some types of people that they might not be interacting with on a regular basis. Like how, I think I've told you this before, but the first time my mom went to college, when her roommate went up to her and started tapping her head, and my mom was like, "What are you doing?" And she was like, "Checking for horns," because she had heard my mom was Jewish and she legitimately didn't know.
Oh my God.
Like that's something she just really didn't know. There's a lot of people who grow up watching these types of movies who are not exposed to tons of people. DJ and I live in Los Angeles, so like I have a ton of friends who are either trans or non-binary or Black or Hispanic or whatever, like anything that maybe people from smaller towns are not as, don't have as much, like don't understand pronouns or anything like that. Because, and I'm not saying everybody from a small town, I know a lot of people do understand that stuff, but I do think that when we're doing something different now, and it is 2020, this is a massive opportunity to add representation to your slate. And this is not just for the X-Men, but in general with Disney and Warner Brothers, I think that they have an obligation to society to show different types of people. If we're willing to show mutants and aliens, is it that off base to think that one of them could be non-binary? Like, is it that crazy to think that an like people who think that Superman has to be white, is it that crazy to think maybe he's not, you know, like just so in general, that's what I'm always looking for in casting. It doesn't have to be every single cast member, but it will be interesting to see, especially with mutants and whatnot, what they end up doing with the X-Men.
Yeah. And I think with X-Men in particular, since that's always been kind of the brand, and let's say for some reason, like Marvel doesn't want the fan backlash of changing the race of an iconic character. The beauty of X-Men is there's so many of them. Just pick one, pick ones that are those then. Like you can do so many things. And it, I feel like there's such a great opportunity here to engage with the moment we live in. And it's not hard, especially if you take that, if you look at like the Avengers, and the Avengers are like the mostly straight white male you know what I mean? And you say the X-Men's not that. You could have in the movie, you could have a character like a J. Jonah Jameson or some other news pundit be like, look at these superheroes. Like, and you bring up Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth. And it's like, we knew we could trust them. Now anybody can have powers. And you bring up people of color and stuff like that. And you're like, this is what X-Men is. You know what I mean? This is like, it's, it, you can use the, you can, it, it, it's an opportunity to talk about the stuff we're dealing with right now in a way that is more accessible to people, in a way that hopefully helps them understand what other, like you're talking about, other people in other parts of the country are dealing with from different backgrounds, different walks of life. And that's what X-Men is about. And it's a way to make the subtext text. It's like, there's a lot of these things. Like I think the show Carnival Row, it's like, what if beautiful white people were discriminated against? Like, it's like, well, what if,
what a premise.
Yeah. What if the people that are discriminated against have amazing powers? So maybe we should, maybe we could do that one. I don't fucking know.
It's a little doper to me, but what do I know?
Yeah. And again, I think when it comes to X-Men, it's like, that's kind of always been a part of it. So why not embrace it? Especially when you have Marvel at this point has the leeway to, they're making an Eternals movie. They're making an Eternals movie. They could do whatever the fuck they want.
Whatever they want.
So those are
Where is the character of Courtney COVID? What? I mean, dream casting there.
Marvel, get on it. It's your new, it's your new billion-dollar character. Where is Courtney COVID? All right, everybody. Those are our thoughts on New Mutants and the X-Men movies. Let us know. I guess if you're watching live, you can let us know in the chat. If you're not watching live and you're like, wait, you can watch these things live? Yes, you can. You can do that at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Roxy and I are doing the Only Stupid Answers show weekly. If you're listening to this as a podcast, you're only hearing a small part of that conversation. We're talking about a whole bunch of things, all the stuff we're into this week, news, reviews, the whole shebang. So you're going to want to check that out. And also, this is a fan-supported show. It doesn't exist without you coming and supporting. And we know that times are tough right now. So any your contributions to help make this show happen are hugely appreciated. And we're also doing our best to try and give you content on that platform that makes it worth your time and your energy. It's a lovely community. Please go be a part of it. But we're not the only ones. The show is not the only one that's fan supported. Roxy, you're fan supported as well. The stuff that you do.
Yeah, everywhere at Roxy Stryer. Got a YouTube show that's every single day, live at the Roxy. What are we on, 244 today?
Oh my God.
No, 254, because we passed 250. It might be 254. I've lost the days. And also my Patreon, patreon.com/RoxyStryer. And if you like watching people do weird ass shit, then the World Girls, we do every Wednesday night. Tomorrow night, we are doing our In Real Life episode that we taped last month, where we brought on Adam Gertler as we gave deep frying a turkey a whirl.
Nice.
And it was, it's going to be a wild episode. That is not in our, Dorina, Steph and I are like probably the least domestic trio ever. And I will tell you that there is a major faux pas in the episode in which we, not all of the food comes out. Okay.
That sounds like entertainment to me. That sounds like an entertaining time to me. So please go check all that out. You can follow this show at Only Stupid Answers everywhere that matters. But on Twitter, you're going to want to
yank out the vowels from stupid.
Exactly.
Three, two, one.
Yank out the vowels from stupid. So, and you can follow me at DJ Talks Trash, every place that matters. We appreciate y'all. Please like and subscribe and share and get this out there, all of those things. And we'll see y'all next time. Bye-bye.